This is David Williams, co-founder of MedPharma Partners and author of the Health Business Blog. I'm speaking today with Andrew Dreyfus. He's CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. Andrew, thanks for being with me today.
It's good to be with you, David.
I've heard that commercial health insurance premiums, including those from Blue Cross, are going to be almost flat next year. Is that true? And if so, what's the reason for it?
Well, not quite flat, but close. And we are seeing our lowest rate of increase in premiums in almost a decade. And I think there are a variety of factors behind that. And we're seeing this nationally, is that the slowdown in the economy has resulted in a general drop in use of healthcare services. So the economy kind of suppressing healthcare services, we can talk about why that has happened, is one reason. But I think the more important reasons here in Massachusetts have to do with some affirmative steps we've taken here at Blue Cross in a variety of areas. So the first is that we really, almost 2 years ago, asked the hospitals and physicians in Massachusetts to either reopen contracts or in new negotiations to agree to a much lower level of increase than in the past. So, for example, the price or unit cost of hospital and physician care was growing in Massachusetts at 5 to 6% per year. And that 5 to 6 then represented about half of the overall cost, which is why premiums were growing at 10, 11, 12% a year. We asked hospitals in the interest of affordability to reconsider those kind of increases, and were able to get them to accept much more modest increases, more in the 0 to 2% range. So that has certainly suppressed the growth in premium, and although those negotiations were challenging and difficult, we really appreciate that hospitals and physicians really understand that we're in a new era, and they have to make a significant contribution to healthcare being more affordable. Around the same time as that we asked on the price side for hospitals and physicians to be more modest, we also really began to see widespread adoption of our new payment model, which I think you know is called the Alternative Quality Contract, which is a global payment model with significant quality incentives. We began with a few groups in 2008 and 2009. We now have 75% of the primary care physicians and specialists in Massachusetts are accepting global payments. They're caring for about 700,000 Blue Cross HMO members in Massachusetts. And those contracts have very explicit goals for reducing the rate of growth. So when you combine the economy, the contracting pressure we put on physicians and hospitals and what we think of as the fee-for-service world, and then our new payment strategy, I think those kind of that triple threat of, of those three pressures have caused costs to come down significantly.
It seems like 10 or 15 years ago, there was a time where costs had been accelerating rapidly, and then all of a sudden they slowed down a lot, but then they started to rise fast again. Is there something different about it this time?
It's a great question, David, because there is a cyclical nature to costs and spending in healthcare, and I think that's one of the reasons why no one here is declaring victory, because we've had a year or two of more modest increases. We really want to see 3, 4, 5 years of sustained low level of increases in the 0 to 3% range before I think we would believe that we had somehow conquered or seriously cured the healthcare, inexorable healthcare cost inflation that we've seen over the last 20 years probably. I think the last time that there was a slowdown, the people who look back at that see a couple reasons. First, there was some experimentation with different forms of payment. That was the early advent of what we think of now as managed care. And the early versions of managed care really tried to restrict choice significantly. And there was obviously a very strong and negative response from the public and from physicians. And so a lot of those restrictions were loosened, which then caused healthcare inflation to increase. I think we've learned the lessons of that last experience, and we're trying to be smarter about it this time, both in trying to maintain the level of choice that our members want and need, while also building much more powerful incentives into the system, especially for physicians, to curb excessive care. I think in the 80s and 90s, physicians felt like artificial limits were being placed on them, which they resisted and they thought could result in the deterioration of quality. This time we're rewarding and incenting better care. And so I think that has eased skepticism or concern that physicians have, which I'm hoping will make these changes more durable than we had before.
Tell me a little bit about quality. I mean, the Q in AQC stands for quality. I'm sure you take it seriously, but is it something that's taken seriously by providers and by your customers?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. And it's interesting now because our new payment model, the AQC, is mostly discussed today in terms of saving money. But in fact, it was initially developed as much as a quality improvement tool as it was as a cost-saving tool. And I think the paradigm shift, if you will, in this payment model is that we're asking physicians and hospitals to move out of the fee-for-service system, which rewards volume and intensity and complexity, and move into a system that rewards outcomes and quality. And it really comes down to almost, at some level, a simple transition of, in the past, physicians and hospitals earned their margin, and we certainly believe they should have a margin based on volume. Now, they'll earn their margin based on quality, and the quality bonuses are significant enough that they really catch the attention. So, for example, we were one of the early plans that developed what are called pay-for-performance programs with hospitals and physicians, and typically we would add 1% to 2% bonus on top of the fee-for-service payments. And that got a little attention, but not a lot. Now it's 5%, 6%, in some cases up to 10% bonuses they can achieve. And so if at the end of the year a primary care physician is getting a very significant bonus for quality, it really changes the way they think, and they're reorganizing their practices. The other thing is the measures we chose for quality. There are 64 measures, half on the inpatient hospital side, half on the outpatient ambulatory side. And they're not in a black box back here in our offices at Blue Cross. They're nationally accepted, nationally validated measures that physicians care about and believe in. And so I think the fact that they're investing time and energy in creating systems that track and monitor and improve on these measures demonstrate that real quality change is improving. And we have this kind of classic experiment here because we have a group of physicians who entered the contract early and then a group of physicians who did not. And a independent analysis, which is being conducted by researchers at Harvard Medical School and Brandeis University, funded by the Commonwealth Fund, has published in the New England Journal results that showed that quality has improved, costs are coming down. We're looking forward to the results of the second year, which we think will be published in an academic journal probably this summer or early fall.
15 years ago or so, when there was a slowdown in healthcare costs, employers were perfectly happy with what the HMOs were doing. But then when there was a backlash from the employees, employers didn't really say anything, and everybody pointed their finger at the health plans, and then things kind of spun out of control from there. Do you expect employers to play a different role this time around?
I think there is a more significant role that employers can and will play this time around. I think your analysis is right that employers did stand back a little bit. I think one of the things that changed is the urgency of the healthcare affordability issue for employers is much greater. And it's partly because they're competing for those employers who compete internationally, and they're competing with companies whose healthcare costs are much lower. If they have any healthcare costs, in some cases they're in national systems. And also, it's just too great a barrier now to productivity. And so a lot of small employers, for example, will tell you that they're unable to hire new workers simply because adding a worker means adding maybe $15,000 per worker in added healthcare costs, let alone other employee benefits and costs they may have. And so I think there's a eagerness to get involved, and I'd say that expresses itself in two principal ways. The first is that when employers design benefits now, they're really thinking, how do we design a benefit that encourages our employees to stop and think about the cost, quality, or total value of the care they're getting? And so they're using more plans that have more greater cost sharing with consumers. They're using plans that have health savings accounts or other devices for their employees to really think about that this is partly their money that they're spending, not just some third party's money that is invisible to them. So I think they're much more involved in designing benefits. We have some very popular new products, for example, that place hospitals and in some cases physicians in different tiers depending on their cost and quality measures, and there's greater cost sharing if you go to a more expensive hospital that doesn't demonstrate a big quality difference. And those we had those products for several years. There wasn't a lot of take-up. Now they're the fastest-growing products in our portfolio, and we find that employers like it. It's a way to both keep their premiums low and engage their employees more in the decision-making about purchasing health care. I'd say the second major way beyond benefits and design is that employers are getting more involved in wellness, especially large employers, but we're starting to see it come to the smaller employers as well. I think there's a recognition that diet, exercise, nutrition are big factors in determining people's health, and obviously in some cases these may not pay off in a year or two. They may pay off longer term, but there's a interest in that. It also affects absenteeism at work, productivity at work. And so, for example, here at Blue Cross, we've been very involved as a model employer ourselves to get our employees much more involved. If you walk around the halls of Blue Cross, you'll see everyone wearing these pedometers like I have, and we've been having big contests here which get people extraordinarily motivated. And we're doing the same work with many of our customers. And I'd say the final piece of the employer engagement is there's a broader recognition today that there are a small number of patients in our healthcare system that are driving a lot of our spending. You know, 1% of our members drives about 20% of our spending, and 5% drives about 50% of the spending. And the vast majority of those members, while there are a few that have heart transplants or babies that are born early that require very intensive care or major traumas, the vast majority of those 5% that are driving half our spending are really people with multiple chronic illnesses. And those are illnesses that in some cases can be prevented, in some cases can be slowed, and certainly in all cases can be managed more effectively than we do today in our fragmented fee-for-service system. And so employers, when they evaluate the effectiveness of a health plan like Blue Cross, they're really looking, what kind of resources do you devote to these very expensive patients with chronic illnesses? How do you help the delivery system manage them?
We've been speaking so far about private efforts in healthcare, but obviously governments are a huge factor, state governments and federal governments. Talk a little bit about what you see going on now in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It seems as though the government is picking up some of the same themes that you have been working on.
Yeah, well, we're obviously watching it very closely. I think just to step back for a second, our view is that, first of all, there is a legitimate public role for government to play in healthcare, to set standards, expectation, hold the system accountable. And I think we'll see certainly a vigorous debate in our legislature in the next 6 to 8 weeks over some bills that are currently being proposed that will add some new regulatory and reporting dimensions to our healthcare system. Government is also a big payer of healthcare itself, and so through the Medicaid program, the group insurance commission that pays for state and some municipal employees. And so I think there's a real opportunity for, in this case, government to really to copy or model the progress we've been making in the market. Sometimes government leads, and in certain respects, in this case, government may be following. But I think there's an ability for them to help accelerate the adoption of these kind of new payment models in the market. We are always cautious about the government can't overreach and overregulate, and we already have a fairly complex state regulatory structure with a half dozen different state agencies that are involved in some oversight of the healthcare system, and so we're hoping there may be some rationalizing of those functions as part of this conversation. Generally in Massachusetts, I mean, we passed a healthcare coverage bill in 2006, and the leaders in the state who participated in that, and I was among them, made a very explicit political and economic decision to work on coverage first and to really postpone the tough questions about cost, because past efforts both here and around the country to deal with the coverage problem ended up being stymied or halted because they didn't solve the tougher, more complex cost issues. We said we're going to do this sequentially, so coverage first and cost second. And there were some early, more modest attempts to deal with costs over the last several years. I think now we're going to have a bigger attempt to do that. And I think it's appropriate we focus on that because, obviously, if we allow health spending in Massachusetts to grow too rapidly, the extraordinary success we've achieved on coverage will be subverted, and we don't want that to happen.
People around the country have been hearing a lot about Massachusetts healthcare recently, especially in the Republican presidential primary. And now that Mitt Romney is going to be the nominee, it seems we'll probably be hearing even more about it. I'm curious what you hear from your peers when you travel around the country. What kind of comments and questions do they have about Massachusetts healthcare?
Well, I get a lot when I give talks to groups outside Massachusetts or groups that are visiting here. I often start by saying, "Hi, my name is Andrew Dreyfus, and I'm from the future," because I do think that there's going to be a lot of change like what's happened here in other states and nationally. There's a lot of mythology about what's going on in Massachusetts, I find, and so I have to spend a lot of time kind of correcting the facts. People think that state spending has skyrocketed. In fact, state spending has come in about where we predicted state spending, so certainly some added costs for subsidies for low-wage workers, but that was predicted and calculated. Great shortages of primary care physicians, another mythology. I mean, that's an issue that the whole nation will struggle with, but we have a lot of more primary care physicians per capita than any state in the country, and fairly robust use of nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, so I think we need to do a lot more of that. There's some concern around the country about the level of regulatory activity in the state, and in some, you know, there are some cases I agree with some of those concerns, but I think, again, there's a lot of mythology. So I spend some time correcting some misperceptions. One experience I had was I was giving a talk to one group, and a big national healthcare leader said, "Well, Andrew, I'm not sure that your lessons are that valuable for us because it sounds to me like you're really a public utility," commenting on the level and intensity of the regulatory oversight and scrutiny that we're under. And while I don't think we're yet a public utility, there's a lot more market oversight here than there are in other states, and that makes people nervous. And I think other states will choose to implement their reforms differently. Even under the national model, there's a certain amount of flexibility. So I think, for example, our exchange that we call the connector has taken a pretty aggressive stance as a purchaser and in some ways as a second regulator. In other states, I think they'll have more market-oriented exchanges, which will be more along the kind of Travelocity. Here's some plans. Here are the prices. You go choose. And it'll also be interesting to see how that develops.
If the Supreme Court or Congress were to overturn the Affordable Care Act, either in whole or in part, what impact would that have on Massachusetts healthcare overall and on Blue Cross in particular?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, I certainly hope that the Supreme Court or Congress does not overturn the law, because I think on balance, the law is very important, especially in extending coverage to the almost 50 million people in the country without health insurance, without the security of health insurance. Having said that, we would be the state that would be the least affected by a change in the national law. For example, if the Supreme Court overturned the so-called individual mandate and decided it was unconstitutional, we have a mandate that's based on state law and state constitution. Legal experts have really not raised issues about the state's ability to impose such a mandate. That mandate is relatively popular in Massachusetts and has been implemented with very little controversy. I think people will start talking about it more, but I think we'll be able to sustain that. And again, the rest of our reforms, for the most part, have been done on a state basis. There's obviously been some additional federal Medicaid money that came in initially, and there'll be some even more federal Medicaid money that would come in 2014 as part of the national law. And so we would miss that money in Massachusetts because it could help further stabilize our system and allow perhaps some state funding to go to some other sources. And I think if either the Supreme Court overturns or a Republican president or Congress overturns it. We're probably in a long wait again for a big national reform. Typically, it takes a lot to get this done. It took a lot for Congress and the president to do it, and they barely did it. And it was unfortunate that it was not a bipartisan initiative, which I think everyone had hoped. It could take another decade to solve the problem. I also think nationally there's a second issue that's going to be have almost as great an impact, is that soon after the election, Congress gets back to the issue of the deficit and the budget, and clearly both the Medicare program, the Medicaid program, and some of the expansions that are anticipated in the Obama health care law are all, I think, could be faced with some cuts or even in jeopardy. And so that's a legitimate concern for our state as well. But I think the market changes that we're seeing in Massachusetts, our new payment models, some of the responses by the hospitals and physicians to integrate and merge and get larger and get more coordinated, I think those trends are here to stay.
As you mentioned, when you go around the country, you describe yourself as being from the future. But here in Massachusetts, what sort of future do you expect 5 years or so from now? What do you think are the key healthcare issues that we'll be debating in Massachusetts?
Well, it's a hard time in healthcare to do predictions and scenario planning and strategic planning, but it's obviously something we need to and have to do. I think the kind of changes that we're talking about, especially in the delivery of healthcare, so hospitals and physicians integrating, care being more coordinated, consumers being more engaged in care, that's a decade-long transformation. And so 5 years from now, I predict we'll be halfway there. I think there'll be much greater transparency about the cost and quality of care. Right now, we think of these issues at the kind of large level in terms of hospitals, or I think we'll get increasingly granular about that, and how is this group of surgeons do versus that group of surgeons? How is this group of gastroenterologists performing versus another? I think patients will start to become accustomed with engaging their care more, and we've seen patients increasingly using online resources to both learn about their illness, to think about options for their care, and I think that'll be more involved. I think health plans, if in some extent you're asking about our own future, health plans will have to increasingly find broader ways to create value in our healthcare system. If you think about 10 years ago, the healthcare plans essentially designed benefits and products that employers bought, negotiated contracts, and developed networks of hospitals and doctors, and then processed claims against those benefits in that network. And that worked fairly well. Some people will say not as well. But we're in Massachusetts are held to the highest standards of administrative efficiency in the country here. But I think over time, we will have to offer more than that. We'll have to our customers, offer a much deeper engagement and wellness and even more creative benefit design with our with our hospitals and physicians. We'll have to be deeper partners, and we will probably increasingly be in the analytic and informatics business as much as we are also in the insurance business. And we're doing a lot of that now, a lot of consultation to physicians and hospitals. And then finally, I think we'll be in a different position with our members. I think more of our members will probably be buying insurance directly from us, because there are certain trends in the market which may make it of less of a wholesale market, which you could describe the insurance market today. Most people getting their insurance through their employer or through government. We may have a little bit more of a retail market, and that is going to require us to build different capabilities and be more nimble, more agile, more online, more 24/7. So I think in 5 years you'll see health plans evolve in that way, closer partnerships with our customers and our physicians, hospitals, and our members.
Andrew Dreyfus, CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.